Right. By this time, we have already executed the round table today, but not today. Today, a later start. I don't know. Maybe it's special. Maybe it's like playoffs. So we're at the end of the summer.
Yeah, we just change it up.
But we got the band back together. I could not be more excited for this. It is time to talk to Brendan Whitted and Brian Geisinger. Back in the day, we called these guys the League Pass Lair. Nowadays, I just call them friends. Brendan Whitted at HU Cosell on Twitter. I don't know if you're on Threads yet or not. If you are, I'm sure it's the same. And BGeis underscore bird for Brian. Gentlemen, I appreciate both your times. We got NBA basketball and maybe a little college to work with. Oh, I didn't even think about playing the tease. Gosh, I'm so good at this.
We have to.
It's like the first day of the show. That's Brendan. I assume Brian is there as well. All right, let's get to it. I'll start with you, Brendan, since I can see your face. Brian's too pretty to be on TV. Brandon Miller, Summer League, not playing any more Summer League. Fine, got no problem with it. Let's talk about what you have seen so far.
It's been you know, a mixed bag as you kind of get with the younger players. You mentioned he's not playing. Scoot's not playing either.
Scoot got hurt.
He played a couple games, and if this were a regular season, I do wonder if he'd be playing. Like, them shutting him down, like, he shut him down pretty early. Like, he was, I don't know if you caught him on the sidelines, but he was pretty animated as he was watching that game
right
on the sidelines. So I was wondering if this was a case where, you know, it's somebody that you know who's going to be on your roster. You know, he was able to, he played really, really well in limited minutes. He had, in like three quarters of his last game, he had, I think, a 15, 5, and 6 stat line.
Right.
Miller has shown the ability to hit the outside shot. He's shown the ability to take some guys off of the dribble. I try not to get too caught up into summer league, trying to extrapolate what that means for players moving forward. There are some guys that I take more of a harder look at, and those are usually the guys that aren't rookies but are maybe the undrafted guys that maybe I had an eye on. But like James Bouknight for the Hornets went for 28, I think,
right,
the other night. And that's the kind of stuff that I look for a guy that's really kind of teetering on the edge of whether or not he's going to be with the Hornets long term. He's shown flashes of stuff, has struggled defensively. But I always try to temper whatever my expectations are. You know, when Wimby goes for 2 for 9 or 3 or whatever that poor shooting stat line was, I try not to take too much of that into it either, because, like, hey, I know he's the best prospect since whatever. But, like, let's – summer league can – you know, you're in the desert. It can give you some delusions a little bit, and it's important to kind of measure all of that stuff.
Not to mention you're not playing with the same players you're going to play with. There have to be some nerves involved. Let me go to Brian.
There's no incentive for winning.
Yeah. It's a weird place. The games are terrible. Anyway, let me ask Brian this. First of all, because I'm curious, when you said you compared it to, when Brendan compared it to Scoot, like, I understand fans are going to be doing that. I'm not sure I care. To me, it's all about, I hope both guys are great. But I don't know that it matters to me if Scoot is great. I think Miller was the right pick for Charlotte. Brian, what did you see from him? And is the comparison to Scoot okay? I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong. I just hadn't processed it that way. What do you think, Brian?
First off, as I've said numerous times, I think Scoot should have definitely been the pick. I think he was the far superior prospect. I like Miller, but I think the Hornets really swung and missed without drafting Scoot. But as far as Miller goes, like, I mean, prior to the game, the last game he played at Summer League against Portland, he looked pretty bad. Like, he really struggled in the games in Sacramento, in the first couple of games out in Vegas, and I think some people thought maybe he was fatigued, and that's something to take into consideration. He certainly had good moments, but he really struggled with the outside shot. He has not been, routinely able to take guys off the dribble when post guys have switched out onto him. And when he faced drop coverage in the pick and roll, he's leaned really, really heavily on the runner, and touch just hasn't been there for him.
Right.
A big part of Miller's finishing package at Alabama, and he struggled finishing in the paint and at the rim in the half court especially, was he had to use his length to finish over guys because he's not a separation guy. You know, like we've talked about this before with someone like Chris Middleton. Like, they don't get buckets by just, like, you know, creating space. They get it by shooting over the top of guys. And for Miller, that's the case, you know, both in the mid-range and from deep in at the rim. I think he was bothered some trying to finish over the top of guys in the paint. Like, that advantage is not quite the same as it was at Alabama versus, you know, even playing sort of like, you know, quasi-NBA basketball in summer league. But I think for the most part, he also passed pretty well. He showed some of the vision. He showed some of the pick and roll ability. He showed some of the team defensive flashes. Like, I'm pretty optimistic about Miller as like an NBA player, but I think it's like a little tough of a start when the guys drafted after him, like Amen Thompson, Star Thompson, Scoot Henderson, Jairus Walker. Like, all of those guys looked better than he did in summer league. So it's a little tough, but you know, I think Miller is a good player going forward for the Hornets. And my thought would also be, like, you know, once he gets to play with LaMelo Ball and Gordon Hayward and PJ Washington, assuming the Hornets do the wise thing and bring him back in restricted free agency, like, that's going to help Miller out a lot as like a secondary creator for the Hornets.
Hi, Brian Geisinger and Brendan Whitted joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. That was as close to a disagreement as I think you guys have had in terms of players. But let me just follow that up, Brian, about Scoot versus Miller. And I'm not – look, I advocated for Miller mostly because I just don't see how Scoot, who needs the ball, and LaMelo Ball, who needs the ball, can both have the ball. They can't share it. That's illegal. So we can't both have it and go down the court. I'm pretty sure that's a violation. So how would it have worked out? Because I think, Brendan, you and I definitely talked about it. I am not a LaMelo Ball. I am not the future is LaMelo Ball guy. I think the future is somebody else. I'm not saying LaMelo Ball is not a good player. I just don't see him as a guy that is going to win titles with you. And I would have been willing to.
But Gold, if that's the case, then you should have drafted Scoot Henderson.
Right? No. I agree.
Like that's,
I agree.
That's
but
the thing, you
but
know?
Like, but we knew they were going to give LaMelo that deal, $260 million over 5 years.
Well, it's really ultimately it's probably going to end up being like $200 million. Like, he's only going to hit the 260 if he qualifies, if like he wins MVP.
Oh, okay.
Like, well, one of the all NBA teams. That's what triggers the 30%.
You said
max, not the 25%.
Only. I just want on the record that Brian said only $200 million.
Okay. I like $200 million.
Yeah.
He's a 22-year-old all star. And the way those guys would have fit. And look, like, I know it's one, like, it's you. It's impossible to take egos out of this, and it's impossible to just say, like, just treat players as like recognized items. Like, these are people with personalities and confidence issues and like all the in sort of visions for what their career is supposed to look like. But what I would say is this: one, LaMelo is an incredible spot up shooter, 41% for his career on catch and shoot three, the monster number on a ton of volume. You would have just said, hey, take 10 of those a game. You would have staggered their minutes. And both guys are good off-ball players. Scoot Henderson's a really good cutter. He doesn't shoot it well from deep now, but he will eventually. And ultimately, like, if you're going to win a title, you need multiple ball handlers. You need multiple creators. And that's still, I suppose, like, I shouldn't just say title. I should say, like, to be, like, a contender, a good playoff.
Right.
You need those. You need that kind of, like, setup. And perhaps, like, Brandon Miller as, like, a, you know, 6'9", jumbo, wing, pick-and-roll creator. Maybe the Hornets do have that. I have my doubts. But the other thing with LaMelo, too, is as good as he is, he's awesome. Like, he's an incredible shooter. He is a visionary in terms of his open-floor passing and just his, in general, his playmaking and his feel for the game and his anticipation is all incredible. He really struggles to beat guys consistently off the dribble and finish through contact in the paint in the half court. And that's something that Scoot Henderson, even though he has, it's maybe not like a strength of his just yet, he has the ability to touch the paint every time he wants. And, like, he's getting better as a finisher. And so I think those two guys would have fit really, really nicely, because right now, if LaMelo is your best player, I think your half-court offense is going to be limited in a playoff setting. You can still build a top-10 offense around LaMelo. The Hornets did that two seasons ago when they were number six in the NBA in offensive efficiency. But my thought would just be, ultimately, you're going to need a guy that can consistently get into the paint, beat his guy off the dribble, create fouls, and finish in the paint. And, like, Scoot Henderson projects to be that. So I think, ultimately, there's a way you could have found a way for those two guys to bounce off one another. But, you know, that's near here, not here nor there at this point.
Gosh, it sounds so logical, and you said it, and now I'm mad that I didn't think about it. Brandon, we have to talk about something else now, because I feel inferior. Brandon Winnett and Brian Geisinger are here as part of our round table. Where's James Harden's best landing spot, Brendan?
I mean, for a long time, I thought that we've been hearing the Rockets rumors for a really long time. And I just really kind of never believed it, because that's not usually how a player's career goes.
Right.
Usually it's, hey, I've done a lot of individual stuff. I want to win more. He got a little bit of a taste of winning with Philadelphia. Neither he nor Embiid play well in that game seven, right? Like, I mean, it is what it is. But he also did lead the league in assists, and he won them two games, right? Like, he had two monster games. I honestly thought that playing alongside Embiid made the most sense. Now, I really don't know. It seems like he really wants out, so like, he wants to go somewhere else. Man, I mean... it makes so much more sense to play with Embiid, to have that sort of a pick and roll player. If you take away all the things that we've seen the last couple of years, that's where I would have picked for him. I mean, if he wants to go play with the right, that's the other thing. What's important to him? Like,
right.
is it that you want to just go and have fun and do other things other than win? Cause even with Harden, the Rockets aren't making that leap. So if you have other things in mind, if that sort of stuff Brian alluded to earlier, these are people, right? Like, and so just because basketball is what we know them for and what we love watching them for, it doesn't mean that's necessarily the top of mind for them about where they end up going to work, which is what this is, them going to work. And so if that's where he wants to be, fine. But I guess I'm just surprised that this is the career arc that we're getting for a player that seemed like he was more interested in winning, especially now with there have been talks about Phoenix and stuff before they brought on Beal. Like, I guess I'm just a little surprised that he doesn't want to, they wouldn't want to stay there.
I'm just going to declare the process a failure. We trusted the process. There's only one player left from the process, and one player brought in from a trade of a player who was part of the process now apparently wants out too. I don't know. It's just Joel Embiid. Left at the end. Brian, your guy, Chris Paul, I read yesterday that he still thinks that he can start next to Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. I mean, I guess he could, but will he? And if he doesn't, how much do we really expect him to play in Golden State?
So, I mean, I think over the course of the regular season, he'll end up starting some games just because guys miss time, and you know, Steve Kerr will, you know, mix up the lineups here and there. And if they go small, you know, in theory, they could start Chris Paul, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Andrew Wiggins, and Draymond Green, right? Which, like, at times, Steve Kerr has been reluctant to sort of like outright start Draymond at five when that lineup is his best, and he kind of wants it as just like ace in the hole in lieu of having Kevon Looney at the five. So, like, my thought is, like, eventually, like, Chris will settle into a super sub role. He'll be a spot starter for them. He'll close some games for them too, because my guess is that they'll go small to close some games and finish with that lineup that I was just mentioning. But yeah, I mean, I could see parts of the season where if Klay Thompson's missing a game or two, then it's Chris and Steph starting in the backcourt, right? And along with Wiggins, Draymond, and Kevon Looney. So I think ultimately, like, he'll still play a decent amount of minutes. He'll be able to get more rest than he has in previous seasons. I don't know. Like, those comments were definitely, like, they, you know, just I think given the sort of, like, prickly nature of the relationship between Paul and the Warriors going back for a decade now, like, it does add sort of like some weirdness to the relationship. And I think it would have soothed some of the concerns if he comes out and says, like, yeah, I'm cool. Like, yeah, no problem. Like, I'm the sixth man. Bring me off the bench. But, like, I would also just say, like, it would have surprised me if he had done that, too. Like, people were surprised. And it's like, this guy's been, like, one of the best players in the world for the last two decades. He's one of the best, guards in the history of basketball. And he's been a starter since he came into the league in 2005, like, almost 20 years ago. So, like, it would have been a little surprising if he was just like, yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah, like, definitely come off the bench. But I think there's a chance for this to work and to be really, really, kind of a weird fit, but one that works out in a lot of ways. And I also can't wait to see Chris and Steph, play together. I think that's going to be – has a chance to be really, really fun.
I just can't wait to see both Chris Paul and Draymond Green on the court together. Just don't light a match anywhere near that. Brendan, we'll close on this. Make a list of the people or the teams or players that Chris Paul doesn't have a prickly relationship with.
I mean, he seemed to get along really well with LeBron. Which is, that's been a really interesting one, right?
Like, Dwayne Wade.
He's a guy that's like, hey, he's done all the winning while Paul has not quite been able to get there, and they still have that good quality relationship.
Yeah, the banana boat crew.
Yeah, like he might be. Look, Draymond, him and LeBron have gotten into it on the court, but right. I mean, on the court versus off the court for these guys can be really, really different. To say nothing of if a guy has a business or financial relationship,
right.
With somebody. So like he gets along pretty well, I would say, with like people outside of the competition. His thing has always been he can be tough on anybody he's playing against or even sometimes people he's playing with.
Yes.
And we can't necessarily extrapolate that to, oh, this is what he's like off court. Right. I think we do a ton of that.
This was all about on court prickliness.
Oh, yeah.
And I say that and I'm being very careful here. Shouts to my friend Julius Hodge. Because you just have to be very careful of how you say that. We have to go. That's Brendan Whitted and Brian Geisinger. I was never part of the League Pass, Larry. I was never allowed in.
That's not true.
That's
not true.
You've been invited several times. I don't know what we're doing.
I'm a married man. I can't go to the Lair. all right. That's Brendan Whitted and Brian Geisinger. Gentlemen, I appreciate it. This was fun. Thanks so much.
Absolutely.
Yeah, anytime.
You got it. At HU Cosell, at @BGeis_Bird. Still on Twitter because I don't think either of them are on Threads yet.
Pepsi Zero Sugar has a new, better flavor. A Zero Sugar Cola has never tasted this good. But we don't expect you to take our word for it, so we're putting it to the test. Starting with me. My mouth is watering already, so I think we can skip the drum roll and get right to the main event. Cue the fireworks. We have an official best Zero Sugar ever. It's delicious, it's refreshing, and it's so good you'll need to try it for yourself. Trust me. Pepsi Zero Sugar. Zero never tasted so good. That's what I like.